Okay, I'm gonna start. This is Nina, and I'm the host for today. I'll be doing the teaching, and Candace is co-hosting with me. And welcome, everyone. The focus of this month that we've been working on is transcendental dependent arising, and today I'm going to be talking about happiness. So today, I'm going to talk about and explore one of the most beautiful but misunderstood, often misunderstood factors in the Buddhist teachings of transcendental dependent arising. And that's the factor of happiness, which is, in the Pali word, is sukha. I know most of us come to Buddhism seeking peace and wisdom, freedom from suffering. So, in the teaching of the transcendental dependent arising as presented in the Upanishad Sutta of the Buddha, suffering itself can be the condition for faith, and then faith for gladness, gladness into joy, joy for tranquility, and tranquility for happiness. You know, happiness also helps for concentration and ultimately for liberating. So the Buddha taught something I feel is pretty remarkable. The path to liberation matures through a sequence of these wholeness conditions, which one naturally gives rise to the other. So it goes from, as we have been learning, from suffering to faith to gladness to joy, tranquility, and happiness, and on to concentration. So this happiness is not just ordinary pleasure. It's not excitement, and it's not entertainment, and it's not some kind of sensual gratification. The Buddha distinguished between worldly happiness and spiritual happiness. He said, there are those two kinds of happiness: the happiness of household, which is the happiness of everyday life, being with our family, surprises, and things like that. And then there's the happiness of renunciation. And of the two, he said, happiness of renunciation is superior. And I'll talk more about renunciation later. So this happiness arises when the mind gets free, even temporarily, from our agitations, from our cravings, from resentment, fear. It's the happiness of our burdens being put down. So, and imagine carrying a heavy pack for many, many miles. And when you finally set it down, there's relief. Nothing new has been added, but something oppressive has been removed. So this is very close to the happiness the Buddha is describing. When tranquility deepens, we relax. Our mental conflict subside, and happiness can naturally appear. The Buddha taught that happiness emerges when the causes of suffering temporarily cease. He also said, for one who is joyful, rapture arises. For one whose mind is filled with rapture, the body becomes tranquil. And we've learned about tranquility last month. For one tranquil in body, happiness arises. And that's the sequence. The joy softens the mind, and then the softened joy becomes tranquility. Tranquility matures into happiness, And happiness calms our and stabilizes our attention, and that's how concentration deepens. For me, the important point is that happiness is not separate from our practice. Happiness itself is a stage in our practice. I can may have thought that happiness was a distraction, but Buddha felt that happiness is a necessary step and support for awakening. Thich Nhat Hanh, who I loved, was a wonderful teacher, and he emphasized the importance of cultivating happiness. He always emphasized that. In fact, that's why he mostly often instructed the practitioners to let go and smile while meditating. And I try and practice that. So happiness is essential. And I've come to believe the primary focus of the Dharma is to help us overcome our vices, to cultivate wholesome virtues, and to find happiness. Bhikkhu Bodhi says that the focus of transcendental dependent arising is the destruction of taints. And so the Buddha repeatedly emphasized that wholesome happiness supports awakening. And that's how I've observed it. When my mind is unhappy, I look for a distraction. Too often, it's going shopping. Or I'll look for an escape. That means I'll start scrolling on the internet and finding out what's on TikTok or YouTube. Or when my mind isn't happy, I'll seek any stimulation like food or something else or music. Anything to not deal with my self-imposed suffering and not investigating what's happening. When my mind is unhappy, I become restless. I become forgetful and indulgent with food, usually. But when happiness is present, when I'm calm and tranquil and happiness comes, my attention just settles. I'm really calm. I'm in peace. I notice that all this craving or grasping or seeking escape, that all diminishes. That all goes away. And my stubborn resistance to try to deal with my problems, that weakens. And most importantly, my awareness is in the present. And I've discovered that feeling happiness is not opposed to having wisdom, because on the contrary, happiness supports wisdom. One source of spiritual happiness, repeatedly praised by the Buddha, is the happiness of ethical integrity, and he taught the bliss of blamelessness. When our actions are aligned with compassion and wisdom, the heart becomes lighter. And I often overlook this. I can't seek happiness through meditation while neglecting my ethical conduct, my doing well. And when I'm feeling guilty about something, my mind cannot settle. And it happens all too often. Or I'll be ruminating in a spiral state of blaming myself or blaming others for whatever. So I try to remember to ask myself questions in a non-judgmental way. I recently listened to a talk online from a Buddhist monastery in Canada, and it didn't say who the teacher was on the video, but he talked about a method that we can use during these times, and he called it think. And he used T for timeliness. Like, is this really the time that I need to react or to say something? And then honesty, being honest. And then intention. So that's THI, the intention. What was the intention in what I was doing? And this necessity, the N and think. Is it necessary to react? Is this necessary for me to say something? Is it necessary for me to fix this? There's the K in kind, and that stands for kindness. Is there kindness in what I'm doing? So I try to ask myself these questions in a non-judgmental way. Like, did I speak truthfully? Was I kind? Did I or did I not cause harm? And did I cultivate generosity? Was I gracious? And this is not self-judgment. But I've been realizing that this helps me to recognize the causes of happiness. Because if I approach things in a wholesome way, then there's a happiness that arises in the situation. There's a happiness that arises within me. I mean, I could, I think about, especially with my children, it's like, I gotta say something, or I want to get involved, or I want to fix it. But I found with my practice that the more I restrain myself, the happier I am. The happier or more calm the situation becomes. Another way to cultivate happiness is during meditation. We can start when we sit, and sometimes when I'm sitting or we're getting ready to meditate or I'm in a retreat and I can't settle down. But what I can ask myself is, what is not wrong in this moment? What is not wrong? My body's breathing. I have the functioning of my awareness. There's an absence of any immediate danger. And the fact that I have the opportunity to practice. So with that, gratitude arises within me, and simply by recognizing that what is present is sufficient. And so very often I have well-being present. Even beneath all this dissatisfaction in the world, at the same time as having dissatisfaction in the world, because there's a lot of dissatisfaction these days. But there's also a subtle well-being that I've been able to touch because of my practice. There's no doubt it's because I continue to practice. So practice is not creating happiness, but it's noticing what happiness is. One obstacle that we may imagine happiness is that it's dramatic. Happiness, it's, you know, all up and, you know, giddy. But the Buddha's happiness is quiet. And going back to renunciation, so that is another source that of happiness praised by the Buddha, renunciation. Now this sounds intimidating. I grew up in a Catholic family where for me renunciation means going to confession and telling of your sins. A real oppression. But what the Buddha meant, renunciation was freedom. So, you know, I can get into an angry state and just be clenching my fists and being tight for a while. You know, once I go into my reflection or understand that I need to give this up because it doesn't even make any sense, then there's a freedom there. So every time I experience non-clinging, there's a piece of happiness in that. I can notice when I stop replaying old arguments that I've had, or why did we break up, or why did I fight with this, and you know, it's like something that happened years ago, right? Or I can stop defending my opinion. Like it has to be my way. So my way or the highway? No. There's no reason. Right? Or I can stop grasping for a particular outcome. Stop grasping. You know, when I sit down to meditate, I remember an experience I had years ago, and we had this. I went to a local Buddhist monastery, and they had a visiting monk that came from Sri Lanka. He was wonderful, and I had a wonderful, like, karmic experience. I was like in the zone, you know. I was like, how can I say it? Interconnected with everything, with the universe. And I had never felt that before. And talking to the teacher, he felt that I had really had some advanced meditation there. So after that, you know, every time I sat, I wanted that experience. I wanted to do that again. And that didn't happen because I was grasping, because I had the expectation that I could do this all the time. But I learned from my practice that happiness is not in grasping, it's really in letting it happen, and being ease, having no expectation. Just being helps. So there's happiness and satisfaction in simply being in the present. Simplicity, feels nourishing. Silence can feel full. Awareness feels stable. And this happiness is very subtle. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, a surprise party. But it's still as profound. But it doesn't depend on external circumstances. It depends on going through this dependent, transcendental dependent arising. And the other thing I want to say is that, well, first let me go to some of the obstacles that we may have to happiness. I used to teach, I used to lead women's healing circles and women of color healing circles. And I found that some women of color had felt that they were feeling guilty because they were taking care of themselves. That they distrusted being happiness because it wasn't essential to the cause of revolution or change. And that's because of trauma. Because of trauma that we go through. So they think suffering is the spiritual, and you know, it's something that has to, that we have to endure. But the Buddha didn't teach this. He said, wholesome happiness is not an obstacle. Another obstacle is chasing extraordinary experiences, just like I talked about, you know, trying to grasp the same meditative experience that I had, which caused a lot of tension, which, you know, made me doubt about my my practice. Other obstacles are ignoring small happinesses. And awakening often develops through the appreciation of subtle well-being. We have a calm breath, a peaceful moment, when we have a kind intention. I feel happiness when, I don't know, I know this may, I like to, or I'd like to have the opportunity to give some money to beggars. And I know some of them may take that money and go get high. Or, but some of them are hungry. But I don't mind. If I have the money to give, it gives me happiness to do that. And these are seeds of that. So it's all of the things that we've learned in the past year or in the past 2 years. Transcendental dependent arising includes all of the things that we've learned about the Four Noble Paths, especially the fourth, that there is an end to suffering. And then it's the Eightfold Noble Path. All of those things, ethical conduct, generosity, gratitude, loving kindness, mindfulness, all of those things are help us to cultivate happiness in our lives and open up the heart of happiness. So I'll close by saying that the factor of happiness in transcendental dependent arising teaches a vital truth, that awakening is not built on struggle alone. It unfolds through wholesome conditions that we nurture in our hearts, When tranquility deepens, happiness arises. When happiness arises, concentration follows. And we'll talk about more about concentration next month. But when we have when concentration matures, that reality is seen very clearly. And from that clearing comes liberation. And the Buddha's invitation is not really to understand happiness intellectually or studying it through books. It's known directly that happiness comes from ethical living, from letting go of clinging, from collected awareness, and the freedom from craving. And as the Buddha taught, there's no happiness higher than peace. So, may we cultivate the causes of tranquility. May tranquility mature into happiness. May happiness support deep concentration, and may concentration reveal things as they truly are. And may that seeing culminate in complete freedom for the welfare of all beings. Thanks for listening. So now I think we'll take a break for about 4 minutes. We have time. And then we'll come back and we'll have a discussion. Hi, welcome, and I welcome any reflections or comments or talk about it. Some of the questions you can ask yourself is, how can we allow to appreciate the goodness already present? Yes, Seuss.
Loved your talk, and I have a question. The your guided meditation, the metta, where may all good aims be fulfilled. And I love language and thinking about your word of aims. And if it also includes, you know, desires and expectations, and it's because when you were talking about the obstacle of you know, wanting a certain outcome or all the expectations, and yet there's this, may our good aims be fulfilled. And I just wondered if you could talk about that some. I know it's more nuanced, but 'cause good aims are really, they're to be cultivated, but what's the tension between when it goes from good aims to an expectation or a, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, I certainly do. Well, the word aims is actually what Bhikkhu Bodhi uses. He uses that those exact words. I really copied it exactly from him. So I would guess that, you know, the phrase that he's saying is just, you know, that, you know, practitioners have wholesome aims. I mean, that's what I think.
Yeah. I get into trouble when my aims become, you know, they slip into an expectation, or they cling to a certain desire for an outcome. And of course, what you said in your talk was about the practice helps us distinguish between that when we get, you know, to the wholesome desires. And anyway, I appreciate, and that maybe the, and this happiness is kind of nuanced. You said you use the word subtle, and anyway, thank you a lot for that.
Thank you. Hey, Judith.
Hi, Nina. I also appreciated your talk. Thank you. And something that you said that kind of flitted through my mind a few days ago. What isn't wrong right now? Maybe I could focus on what isn't wrong instead of all the things that are wrong. My knee was a little sore, which comes and goes, and I caught myself getting into this fretting, and all of a sudden I thought that, what is not wrong about my body? Well, I don't have a broken arm anymore, you know. That was mm-hmm. a big one. And it just totally switched my focus. Yeah. And I realized, well, I was capable of being happy when I had a broken arm. You know, maybe I'm capable of being happy even when my knee is sore, you know. So thanks for reminding me of that. That was yeah. very, very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, that's a real opposite of what we've been conditioned to think. You know, it's like, you know, this is wrong. Well, what's not wrong?
Exactly. It's yeah.
Thanks. Hi, Liz. Can't see you, but hi. Hey.
Could you, that was a brilliant talk. It was wonderful. So many great tips on happiness, especially external to the wild winds that blow us around this universe. Could you repeat, I love mnemonics. Can you repeat that think situation again? That's I love that. That's a hot tip. I like that.
Yeah, I like it too. A T is for timeliness. Like, you know, it's just a good time to be doing this. H is for, what did I say H for? H is for
honesty.
Honesty, thank you. I can't think right now. And I was for intention. N was for necessity. Is it necessary to be doing what you're doing now? And K is for kindness. Oh, thanks, Zeus. Just put it in the chat.
Thanks so much.
Oh, you're welcome. Lauren, morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much, Nina. I got a lot of things I appreciated about your talk, and one of them was that mnemonic think. But I won't speak about that, but I'm going to use that, especially with wanting to fix things with my daughter, because I really need to really use that.
I relate.
I put two asterisks there. And then the emphasis on renunciation I really like, because, you know, renunciation is often not considered a positive thing, at least feeling pleasant. It doesn't, you know, it's not considered pleasant, but I really liked renunciation as freedom to the Buddha, and the freedom aspect of happiness that makes such a difference, that is, I think, really important. And that I liked the emphasis on renunciation and the freedom that renunciation offers. And I think that's so true. So I just wanted to thank you for including that.
Thank you. Yeah. Charles. Hi, Charles. Are you new?
Hi. Relatively, yeah.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the talk. Really enjoyed it as well. For me, what really resonated was something that I've been the contrast between a happiness that's kind of the transitory, come and go. I think you said householder happiness, and then one that is more solid that we can kind of take with us. And I just want to piggyback on what Judith was saying about reframing, and I think it's from, well, I'm not sure the source, but I think we've heard it out there, maybe Goldstein, the looking at things from kind of the opposite perspective of the, you know, the pleasant, neutral, unpleasant, and understanding that when things are unpleasant, it's kind of, as you were saying, it's an opportunity of what is right, or maybe when we have an injury and we can say, you know, I can bring presence to this unpleasant situation, it's actually an opportunity to maybe develop more solidity in our awareness and our concentration. And that's helped me to avoid some of my wanting to escape, as you were saying as well. So all that really resonated and built on some of my thinking. So thank you very much for sharing that with us.
Yeah, thank you. You're welcome. That's good. That's good. I like that. Yeah. Candace.
Thank you for that wonderful talk. One of the things that I was noticing, we had a gathering yesterday of the Death and Dying group in Sims, and I was realizing how just being in Sangha is such happiness. It just creates happiness to have all these Dharma friends around you. And so many people in the group mentioned how when they began their practice, the three jewels, it was the Buddha and the Dharma that were the top of the list. But as your practice goes on, Sangha becomes so important. Just all these friends and the ability to really speak deeply with friends. And, you know, it seems a lot of that is because of so much renunciation that we do and, you know, the holding back on fixing somebody, but really learning to listen to them. It's just a magical, very gradual transformation that makes you realize how much easier it is to be with people who are also on the path. Mm-hmm. And that was just a really, I was just kind of sitting there and purring, you know, in the meeting, because it just felt so at home and so easy, you know, even though people were sharing very, very deeply felt things. And your talk this morning just really brought that up, that this happiness is it's a quiet thing. It isn't, you know, it doesn't have fireworks and, you know, bells ringing and stuff. It's just this wonderful peace. And that's why it comes out of the tranquility. Yeah, so I just loved your talk this morning. Thank you, Nina. And I loved the think too. I wrote it down and I'm gonna have that.
Yeah, I really like that too. Thank you so much. Yeah, I love that. I love that. And you know, I'm also realizing, and I said it during the metta, in the Sangha, you know, we have friends. I'm a very shy person, so I'm not very outgoing and but it is such a blessing to be able to talk and study and, with those who are like-minded and are, you know, pursuing the Dharma and the path. Yeah, that's really important for me too. Yeah. And it's so happy to get feedback on what I'm thinking about, you know, thinking about these things. And, you know, transcendental dependent arising is, I don't know if I should say it's a hard thing. Yeah, I guess so, because it is a different way of that we've been conditioned to be and to understand life. And so going through that with others is I'm very grateful for that. That's for sure. Yeah. Lauren.
Yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing that really struck me about your talk was the appreciation for things that are, how did you word it? Appreciation for, let's see, what is not wrong. And I remember reading a little booklet by a nun, a Buddhist nun, Ajahn Sundara. And she talked about being a nun, and she said, you know, we exist on what is offered to us. We are not given a lot of opportunities to, you know, ask for what we want and, you know, think about what we want because we're, you know, reduced. We have a lot of renunciations. And she said, however, that each day it gives us the opportunity to be grateful, appreciative of what is offered. And so it was like, I heard that, you know, and so sometimes when I'm feeling that, oh, you know, everything's going wrong, I'll think of her with, you know, having to receive whatever food's given her, you know, not going out and buying new clothes or whatever. And thinking, oh, so what's offered today? Gratitude for what is offered. And I just wanted to throw that into the soup that we're enjoying today. Thank you.
That's good. Thank you. Thanks so much. That's good. I know there's a lot, and you know, that I'm discovering as a foundation for the ability to be happy. And yes, it may be temporary, but I think the more I practice and realize and I'm aware of it, it comes more easily. Yeah. Hi, Faith. How are you? Oh, you're muted. You need to unmute. You need to unmute, honey.
Yeah, there.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I noticed that. Linda held her hand up also. Very, just for future talks, maybe. I blurt. I react before, you know, all the think. So how people have approached growing the ability to pause for a second and think, and my mind is, I love my mind, it's you know, but it also, my reaction is too fast for me to think. And the words are out there, and then I want to just take them back. So that thing, and also that I would love the peace, and I don't know how to filter out. I have people in my life right now who just want a lot from me, and their lives are a mess. And I'm used to being a kind person, and I'm learning not to fix. But that doesn't keep them from asking. So, and yesterday I felt inundated, and I just wanted everybody to shut up. So those two, I'm sure that everybody here has had experience with that. So anyway, and thank you for your talk. I love your gentleness, the way you expressed all your ideas with total non-bombast. So thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, and I can relate to your situation, and I you know, and all this talk and practice I've done, I mean, there's times that I blurted out too, and also have had experiences where I feel overwhelmed by what's being asked of me. So, yeah, the only thing I suggest what I do is just, you know, sit with it. Because, you know, you can respond by what's truthful for you. You know, it's not always easy, but I can relate. Thank you so much for giving me more food for thought. Thanks. Lindell. Hi, Lindell.
Hi, I have my sweet cat out here now. She got a lot of meta this morning, but that was a really beautiful talk, Nina. And there were so many little gems, you know, and I also appreciate the way that you kind of stressed the importance of really being able to appreciate, just appreciate the present moment. You know, and in daily life and in our meditation practice. And how that really contributes to just being, having that kind of sense of contentment and not having to reach out all the time for something better or more exciting or different or how we think it should be, you know. So I really enjoyed that part and also bringing this thing into this whole progression of transcendent dependent arising, because I'm right there with you that this is a big deal. And it's really nice to be exploring together. And I appreciate your helping us to remember how the different parts fit together.
Yeah.
Because that's really helpful. So thank you.
You're welcome. Yeah, in you know, developing and studying and developing for this talk, I mean, this is a real opportunity for me. It's like, yeah, it's like, oh my God, this is like what the Four Noble Truths is about. What the Fourth Noble Truth is about. You know, I had to be reminded of that, you know, that, you know, practicing the Eightfold Noble Path, you know, that's what's helping me get there. It's really, and Tweri has a blog on the web. Tweri has a blog on her site, and oh my God, I just lost my train of thought. And anyway, so I just want to emphasize that that's, you know. Practice. She just, you know, she emphasizes that it's our practice. It's our practice that gets us there. I wouldn't be here, or most of us would not have this understanding if it hadn't been for our experiential practice or experiences from our practices. And I'm really, really grateful for that.
Yeah, it's true.
So, anyone else? You've all made me very happy today. Hi, Liz.
Sorry, I'm back again. Not trying to be a hog. Okay. I really appreciated your approach to happiness. I feel like a lot of my younger life, I really sought happiness being a party girl, you know, next party, next, you know, where's dancing, where's drinking, where's, you know, and I realized after, like, I don't know, in the last, like, I don't know, I think it's something I've always been searching for, but to realize that true happiness isn't in that nest experience. It's not in that big dopamine rush of whatever that is. It's there's this that tranquility brings happiness. It's not in that moment that brings happiness, because when hard stuff arises in life or challenges arise in life, that temporary joy isn't necessarily there. And if it is, like, if chasing that temporary joy doesn't necessarily make the moves through difficulties, through dukkha, the juicy stuff that it can be. And I just really resonated with what you're saying, and I appreciated your and mentioning Sangha really was something, because that is true. It's weird to go from an older personality that would be looked at for this pumping of joy and pumping of, like, this temporary, to be somebody that, like, you know, it often doesn't make sense. Hey, I'm leaving the party early, or I'm like, you know, I am going to go for a week, sit by myself, or I am, you know. And it's nice to know that we're out there, and I look forward to every week seeing people's faces and seeing you all, and knowing that there's truth in the path, and trusting in the path, and trusting in that Eightfold Journey. And so I'm done. Thank you very much.
Well, I think that's a perfect segue to end our day, our sit. That was wonderful, Liz. Thank you so much. Really appreciate that. And for us, may the benefits of our practice, the time that we have practiced here, benefit the world. Thank you so much.